Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
It's the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 109, we discuss Sky Sports News returning to US TV, Liverpool seals a deal with Sports Illustrated, Flow Sports clinches a deal to broadcast the CONCACAF Nations League, Telemundo announces Copa America TV coverage plans, plus letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined today by my special guest, Juan Arango. I was going to say special ghost, but I think special guest sounds better.
Right now I haven't had that much sun, so I might look like a ghost as well, so it's forgiven.
And I haven't had much sleep, so one of my kids has been sick, so it's understandable. So Juan, for those listeners who may not know you as well, I mean, you're a writer, you're a commentator, you're a broadcaster. I mean, can you give us a little bit of a background as far as some of the places that you work for and where people can find or listen to you during a regular week?
Sure. Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me on. I do commentary for places like DAZN. I've done stuff with BN Sports, with ESPN regionally, I'm talking about down here in South Florida, as far as ACC Network, as far as University of Miami. I also do a lot of the world feed for CONCACAF. I do a lot of work as far as writing. I'm the Latin American correspondent for Diario Sport in Barcelona, and on occasion I do some stuff with Sportsmax as well, both as an analyst and as a commentator. So I do all that stuff, and plus on top of that, I'm one of the hosts over at Beyond the Pitch, that very popular podcast as well. Not saying that yours isn't. I'm just saying that ours isn't too shabby on our end as well. And of course, you can find me over on Twitter at @JuanG_Arango and Instagram as well over at @JuanG_Arango. So away we go, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah. And Beyond the Pitch, we're big fans of. If you ever get a chance, listeners, check out SoundCloud especially. There's some really good interviews on SoundCloud on Beyond the Pitch. One of them, was you, Juan, with Bruce Scrobelaar, the former Liverpool goalkeeper, the crazy knees, crazy legs guy. And that was really interesting. I really enjoyed that one as well as many other ones we've done.
It was interesting what he had to say, especially when he was talking about when he was at war. That was one of the things. Part of the book that he his autobiography pretty much that he wrote. And that one, another one that's coming out, I believe today, is an interview with Helen Davidson of The Guardian. She's been covering the Hakim Al-Araibi story and what's been going on there, and looking forward to that. And I have a couple of interesting guests. I'll mention them on social media in the very near future, because many people will be rather interesting. Of course, have a new show coming out as far as that Beyond the Pitch umbrella with Phil as well. So I'll keep that under wraps.
Sounds interesting. So for those listeners wondering, where's Kartik? Kartik actually is in London this week. He should be back in the States, I think, this weekend. So he'll be back on the podcast next week. So right now he's I was going to say braving the cold weather, but it's not that cold in London. It's colder where most of the listeners are listening to this show, probably up north.
So Juan, it's warmer in Antarctica right now than in some places in the United States. So.
Absolutely. All right, Juan. So let's take a look back this past week, and I mean, lots of soccer in store that I'm sure that you watched as well as I watched. Mm-hmm. Knowing you, you probably watched a lot of stuff that's different than what I did, which is great. I mean, it's all about the beautiful game, no matter what league or what country. So what for you have you been watching this past week, and what for you was interesting, whether it's from production or commentating or just pure enjoyment of the beautiful game?
Not only is it, I mean, we intersect in certain games here and there, but the way I get it, because of course I've been a bit of a cord cutter in the past few years, is that I've been able to listen to different commentaries from all over the world. Most of the games I listen to aren't in English; they're in Spanish as well as Portuguese. I get a lot of matches from ESPN Brazil. I also get a lot of matches from TNT in Argentina, as well as ESPN, all those other networks, but from other parts of the world. And it's interesting that they kind of coincide when it comes to, I mean, one of the teams that's being watched a great deal in South America, believe it or not, is Leeds United. And especially because of the Marcelo Bielsa effect.
Yep.
You know, not many, I mean, people that know football know Leeds United. But very few people in South America followed Leeds United until this season. It's interesting to see that. Obviously, I didn't see any matches, but every time you'd see SportsCenter or any of the whether it's in Portuguese or in Spanish, there was always a Leeds United segment.
Interesting.
And that's one of the things it's a bit of a phenomenon in that part of the world. And obviously, we can talk about it in the future as far as how they saw the whole issue between him and Frank Lampard in that area, and it was interesting to see that as well. But match wise, it was mostly La Liga. It was mostly a lot of Paulistão, a lot of Argentine league, some Bundesliga. There was a good spectrum of matches, and believe it or not, they show Serie A without having to pay for it. As far as, you know, compared to here in the United States, where you have to pay a special subscription through ESPN Plus. In Argentina, ESPN shows Serie A matches on ESPN.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting too, Kartik. Juan, because you're obviously watching coverage from South America oftentimes, as well as from America and the Caribbean, probably too, from around the world. What's your sense of how the game is covered differently in Latin America, television production-wise, and commentary too, and how that's different than what, say, the Anglo, you know, what we're used to watching or listening to when we're watching, whether it's ESPN or whatever channel it is in the U.S.?
From a production standpoint, I'm talking about what you see. It's not that much different because, obviously, it's a world feed. Great example as far as what they add on to it. ESPN in Brazil, when they show the Premier League, they have an on-pitch, they're broadcasting the games, they're doing them from Brazil, I want to say from Sao Paulo. I'm not exactly sure where ESPN is in Brazil. I think it's Sao Paulo. But while they're doing the matches there, they already have a reporter on site. They have a reporter on site talking, hey, this is what's going on. And then they have also, you know, when he was a manager at Manchester United, you have Jose Mourinho talking to the Brazilian press. Mm-hmm. Direct. I mean, as soon as the match is done, Mourinho would go straight to Nathalie Gedra at times, who she's one of the reporters over at ESPN Brazil. And she'd be the first person that Mourinho would talk to. So you had a different type of interaction compared to when you saw Mourinho in the press room, you know, in the press conference. She wasn't going to question him too much, but you heard a Mourinho that wasn't as confrontational as he was, you know, as in front of an entire press corps that was asking him questions, both positive and negative. So that was a little bit different. You also had a post-match where they would analyze it a little bit more. Now, here, the big difference where I have seen things in Brazil as well as in Argentina especially is that halftime is where the co-commentator really shines. because instead of giving 10, 15 seconds to tell you what, you know, why something happened, they have pretty much a monologue that you can, that they can go to, you know, 4 or 5 minutes where the highlight's going on, and he or she end up looking at a first half and saying, oh, you know, these were some of the things that happened, and they start giving their points. And as soon as something coincides with the points as you, like this play where this happens, they start explaining the play itself as to why certain things happen. Of course, the statistics come afterwards. So that's really the time for the co-commentator to really begin to shine and really begin to explain more in depth what was going on and give a more more in-depth analysis, whether they become very technical or they can, you know, wax poetic as far as that's concerned. But that was, those are some of the big differences that I see.
Yeah, that's huge. That's a huge difference right there. Yeah.
Yeah, outside of course the commentators itself, which is, you know, another point that could be, you know, pretty much extrapolated on a little bit, you know, more in a separate category.
Before we go on to talk about the FA Cup coverage, I mean, some of the ESPN coverage, ESPN Plus coverage that I saw this past week. Now, Juan, I mean, you're bilingual. You mean, you're fluent in Spanish as well as English and other languages too. But like, going back to this past World Cup and going back to just some of the, in quotation marks, experiments that have been done with taking a Spanish language commentator and trying to have him go ahead and do an English language commentary. So whether it's Jorge Perez Navarro, I think Andres Canto has done that in the past too. Fernando Fiore hasn't done the commentary. He's more in the studio, but he kind of flips back and forth sometimes between Spanish and English in some of the interviews he does. But how hard is it? How difficult is it to do that? I mean, do you think there's a way to actually accomplish that? And also, I guess the other question, part of the question too, is that, I mean, it's I would imagine it's a different style, commentating in Spanish versus commentating in English. So how difficult is that for, say, someone like Fox in the past have tried it, and it pretty much failed. It just did not work. What are your thoughts on that whole dilemma?
You really have to start peeling, skin, you know, layers from that onion to really understand things a bit better. And one of the best people that was able to do it was, is one of my executive producers at The Zone. He was asked about, okay, well, what should we do as far as coverage? League, it doesn't get a lot of publicity, obviously, because it's right now it's struggling a great deal, albeit the national team has had success of sorts. He was asked about the Chilean league coverage. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know what, we need somebody bilingual, because first of all, a Latino, just like, you know, an American or anybody else, doesn't like to hear names being mispronounced. Mm-hmm. And doesn't like to hear a commentator that can't sell the story of the league. Whether it's a Premier League, whether it's the Chilean League, or whether it's, you know, MLS or any other league in the world, La Liga, whatever, you have to have a commentator that can tell the story well with idiosyncrasies and everything. If you have a commentator that's just there, he doesn't know it, or she doesn't know it, doesn't, you know, the people won't buy into it. There's not a sincerity to it. As far as or a potential to have a person fall in love with that league, if you just have them there and they're just, okay, well, this is what's going on. You know, you have to have that little bit of extra.
Sure.
As far as Spanish commentary is concerned, there's a lot of different types of Spanish commentary now. Mm-hmm. The most, at least here in the United States, the most common is the Mexican commentary. People that aren't Mexican they're not too fond of, because they end up going in different paradigms. They end up talking about different things. They go off on tangents, and like Univision at times would use a 3-man booth that would change every 30 minutes, especially during the World Cup. The World Cup final had a nine-man booth.
Wow.
And you didn't know when something was going on. All of a sudden they'd switch and another 3-man crew is there and another 3-man crew. And then during extra time of Argentina, Germany, they start switching in 5 minutes, and you're like, wait a second, you know, what's going on here? You don't know who's talking. Mm-hmm. And that's something that in Mexico they do often. They'll do two commentators, where one will do 45 minutes, the other one will do 45 minutes. I've done matches at Univision in English where they try to do it and it doesn't fit as well.
Yeah.
A lot of idiosyncrasies in Spanish don't translate over very well. Forget in English. They definitely don't. But in some countries in Latin America, a Mexican commentator is no way in hell going to be able to translate his idiosyncrasies to Argentina. They're like, you're ridiculous. The ones that do is the so-called River Plate style of commentary in South America, which is, you know, the Argentines and the Uruguayans, in my opinion, the best commentators in the game in Spanish. Now, in English, you know, that's more of a subjective type of issue. Mm-hmm. But they have a combination of telling you what's going on, obviously telling you why it's going on as well. And many of them don't even talk to you about what's going on with the ball because they're talking about how the other person's kind of, you know, as far as his angling, as far as how he's standing to receive the ball. So he's already telling you what's going on around. Oh, by the way, the left back over on the far side is going here while the left back, you know, it's not just how many people that don't speak Spanish think it's just like, he's just rattled. It's like, oh, you know, so-and-so's here. Oh, by the way, the guy, the right back on the right side is making a run in the middle while the one on the left side is, you know, dropping back. And then, oh, look at the midfield. Oh, watch out the run. He goes down the right hand side. You know, he's doing that. He's setting up the play while, but there's 20 million other pieces going on. He's setting up the most important ones. Hey, watch out with that long ball in the middle. If he goes in that direction, that could be where the goal is.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So they're doing all that
in
one breath, essentially. Because of everything that else is going on. It's not just, hey, Messi has the ball and he's running and he's dribbling. No, it's Messi has the ball. Oh, watch out with Luis Suarez, who's setting himself up to be able to make the run because you have, you know, Jordi Alba going down the left side or something along those lines to be able to do that. It's just that question alone could probably be a podcast. I'm trying to be as brief as possible.
Yeah, maybe we'll have you on in the future as far as kind of just a special episode that delves into that because it is a huge topic.
I have Andy West on next week, so we're going to be talking about that as well.
And that's the thing though too, Juan, is that this is such a hot topic just because of in terms of you mean the rising Hispanic population in the United States and a lot of the U.S. broadcasters looking for a way to kind of basically attract a bilingual audience. I mean, many of us, our listeners, many of them who are gringos, that watched whether it's Telemundo or Univision for the past couple of World Cups. I mean, so it is a hot topic, and it's
and it's slowly improving. And I'll tell you because of my experiences. I mean, I've had people tell me you sound too ethnic. I mean, I've had people in broadcast say, you know, try and Americanize it a little bit more. Remember, you're in America. You know, we do things like Americans here. You know, you need to be a little bit more American in your commentary. And I'm like, what does that mean?
Right.
So I mean,
it could mean so many different things to so many different people, depending on what they're right.
Especially nowadays, that's another hot topic as well. But it's getting better, and I see people being able to accept is kind of a, you know, it's not giving it justice. It's just like, hey, you know what? I like that style. I like that thing. I've had people say, you know what? There's times that people do commentary in Spanish. I just listen to it because in Spanish it has a better dynamic to it.
Yeah,
you know,
sounds more exciting.
And I've heard that not just here in the U.S. When I was doing World Cup analysis with Sportsmax, they would tell me the same thing too. You know, so it's just again, you know, there's a saying in Spanish, you know. Tastes, you know, are actually for different types of palettes, you know, that's what the colors are for.
That's true. That is very true. So in terms of some of the games I've been watching this past week, usually, Juan, I usually watch a little bit of La Liga, a little bit of Liga X, Liga Mekis, Serie A, etc. This past week, I was knee-deep. I was drowning, in a good way, in FA Cup coverage. I probably saw about half a dozen FA Cup games, maybe more. And for me too, I mean, and for a lot of listeners, I think it's a special time of the year. The actual football itself is not great, but the David versus Goliath, the scene of these small stadiums, these small teams, and just the hope of a small team maybe battling through and beating a giant. It's really kind of a romantic affair. And watching the ESPN Plus coverage, has been great in terms of being able to pick and choose any of the games All the games are available through live streaming. Some of the things I noticed was that the FA Cup coverage seemed to be improved. IMG, the company that's responsible for actually, getting the crews out into the field and the commentators and all the production side of things. Their coverage has improved. Halftime during a lot of the games, there were highlights of some of what happened earlier in the day. The other interesting thing, though, too, in the past, I think that halftime for FA Cup coverage through the World feed, there usually wasn't anything, no analysis, or no discussion at all. It was kind of, okay, we're just going to come back to the feed just at the beginning of the second half. But throughout all the FA Cup coverage globally and through ESPN Plus for us, there were highlights of the first half. There was a little bit of analysis from the co-commentator, not as much as in South America, I'm sure, but there was a little least. If you're watching on ESPN Plus, it didn't feel that you were missing out as much as in maybe seeing previous weeks where halftime there was just nothing going on. Out of all the games, my favorite was definitely Barnet against Brentford. And this was a game I think Kartik picked out.
You're going hardcore.
Yeah, big time. This was
but it was. I mean, I saw.
Oh, you saw it?
I didn't see the match itself. Okay. But the highlights of it, and it just seemed like it was a wild one. I mean,
oh my gosh!
It was back and forth. Both teams were really going at it, and just to see it. It came out. What is it? It was a 3-3 draw or something like that.
Yeah, 3-3 draw.
But it was
still.
I mean, that's the excitement of it as well. That's the flavor of it.
Yeah, and to me it was pure soccer in terms of just like you said, just a crazy game. But even also, it's a small stadium. The fans were going nuts, so there wasn't much security or stewards there. They're probably not used to having so many people in the stadium, so the fans had flares and smoke bombs going off, and they were jumping up and down, going crazy. It didn't feel like an FA Cup game in terms of the fan base. The fan base seemed a lot more excitable. Seemed like more. It was like it wasn't Superliga Argentina with Boca River or anything like that. But it was really good. A really good game. Just a really end to end action. So it was going deep on that one, but just a fantastic game.
You didn't feel like you were going to die in that match. That's the that's a good thing.
Right.
I liked a couple of matches. I saw. A lot of times not watching entire matches, but like bits and pieces of it, because sometimes I'm watching two or three simultaneously.
Yeah.
I think the Arsenal United match was good, just to see the way United have been able to turn it around ever since, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is coming.
Yeah.
It just shows you how amazing things are with players at this level mentally, to just see them all of a sudden just, say, okay, fine, now we're working. And of course, you could start being a little suspicious of them wanting to get rid of Mourinho. That's another story. But still, it just shows you, how a coach and the way he communicates with his players really can change the way that they see things. And Arsenal, at the same time, it's just a team that's struggling so bad. Again, and we want to take it from a production side. I enjoyed the production. I enjoyed, what I saw from that match. And it's something that, that... To be honest with you, as far as the production overall and how things are packaged in football terms, I don't know if there's many countries like England as far as that's concerned. You can look at it from other perspectives and see what other countries are doing different things. But as far as how it's presented to you, and then the impression you get as Joe fan, England's right there. England's probably the best, if not one of the best in the world as far as doing that.
Yeah, to me, it's very clean in terms of the production values. It's it's what you want to watch. It's very reliable, consistent. Consistency is probably the best word in terms of what you're getting. You're kind of, whether it's in the Premier League or the FA Cup or whatever it may be, it's consistent level of quality. It's very rare that you'll get some stray camera angle or something strange. It is very clean. Watching the FA Cup this past week, though, Juan, I kept on thinking to myself, this could be... Why can't the US Open Cup be like this? US Open Cup, you have the same David versus Goliath. I mean, that's probably a topic for another podcast, too. You can do a whole podcast on that. But that was the thought in my head. I'm enjoying these games, these lower level teams against these higher opposition teams, and this could be something that the US Open Cup could become if it had the investment and had the accountability, somebody kind of managing it that's going to actually make it into a success.
It's
been held back.
We also know how lower level teams are treated in this part of the world compared to that part of the world.
Yeah.
And how inclusive, and I'm just talking about money wise. I'm not even talking about player wise. I'm just talking about, you know, financially, how inclusive all those, those other smaller or lower level leagues have been treated in the grand scheme of things compared to how they're being treated here in the United States now. Mm-hmm. So again, that has a lot to do with it as well. So, I mean, you can go both ways with it, yeah.
So I'm going to play a clip here. This is from John Champion. This was the Manchester City against Newcastle game on Tuesday. This was the final game that John Champion's commentating in England in the Premier League. He's going to be heading to ESPN as a full-time job to commentate MLS games. There is a possibility, perhaps, that he might go back to England if his schedule allows and he has time and then has an opportunity to go back to England, and if there's a Premier League game on, that he could commentate on a freelance basis. Mm-hmm. But it's unlikely. So I've got a clip of the NBCSN broadcast of the last minute or two of John Champion on his final call officially in the Premier League. So let's go ahead and cue that up.
5 promised minutes. This to save face for City. Supporters, no more long-suffering group of fans. They live for moments like the one they are about to enjoy. A cacophony of whistles. Only one matters. The champions fall at the Premier League's most northerly outpost.
Yeah, and there you go, John Champion. I got goosebumps just listening to that one. Just the history of him. I mean, he's almost like the poet laureate of football commentary from an English perspective. You mean just somebody who doesn't talk too much during games, and is very eloquent, very precise with his words, and captures the excitement. And that's somebody that's been with the Premier League since, gosh, I think the 80s, first division back then, but in some form. And
before the Premier League was even the Premier League.
Exactly. Yeah. So going from radio commentary to working with several different broadcasters, and now coming to the United States with ESPN. So that'll be interesting to see. But there's this final last few words officially on the Premier League, and he will be missed.
Yeah. I mean, those types of commentators are the ones that, you know, are give you a little bit more flavor to the game. I mean, obviously, and it goes for everybody in different languages as well. But of course, he's been one of the people that I haven't heard him much. But people come, hey man, you know, John Champion. He, you know, him and I remember one of my producers in Jamaica, Pizza Drury. I'm like, okay, all right, dude. Okay, cool, man. over there, Peter, especially this past year. I mean, he's been looked. I mean, Peter Drury, and I was Peter Drury to death while I was in Jamaica, and he was looked at as an eminence over there. He's commentary incarnate as far as as far as people in the Caribbean are concerned.
Yeah, and with John Champion now leaving the Premier League, it really puts Peter Drury in that top spot as far as the love him or hate him. There's a lot of people that don't like his style,
here's the thing about love him or hate him. And I learned this the hard way. If you're hated, that means you're doing something right.
Right. Yeah. If no one's talking about you at all, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, that's not a good sign. Yeah, that's not a good thing.
Right. You know. Totally. All right, let's move on to TV streaming news. First up is Sky Sports News is returning to US television today. This is the day we're recording this podcast, on Thursday, on NBCSN. So as of last year, Comcast acquired Sky Television for $39 billion. Huge deal there. But as part of that acquisition, now a lot of the listeners have been paying attention to the Premier League broadcasts, have seen Sky Sports and NBCSN working more closely together. We've had some segments where we've had Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher on set. Not much, but this is the first big move. And it means that on Thursday afternoon that we're going to get 3 hours of Sky Sports News, the transfer deadline day, live simulcast on NBCSN. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, if it's an exciting day with lots of crazy transfers, it'll be good television. Even on a boring day, on previous Sky Sports transfer deadline days, they always make it exciting. They're very sensational, which is very much not NBCSN style. But for a lot of the listeners, this is going to be some good news. And so definitely tune in to NBCSN on Thursday.
Yeah, but of course. But one of the I got to throw out some love in that direction to a good friend of mine, David Garrido, over at Sky. You know, he's one of the guys that really gives you a different perspective as far as the, you know, transfers, as far as all the news is concerned. And of course, he has a La Liga show in Spain, in England as well. But you know, really good group of individuals there over at Sky Sports that really can give you a much more local perspective, a much more in-depth perspective, in addition to what NBC is already doing with Premier League.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I mean, there's Sky Italia, which is really good. There's some great analysts there.
Is that going to be part of it as well? The Sky, no. Or is it just what's going on in the UK?
Good question. So they bought all of Sky Television, but I'm not sure in terms of, say, if Sky Italia, if that is partly owned by Sky, but then also owned by some of the Italian television companies. That I'm not sure. But there's probably
That would be interesting.
Yeah, there's probably an opportunity to kind of even if they don't own Sky Italia, there's probably an opportunity to go ahead and leverage some of that in the future if they ever did need to do so. But yeah, I know Sky Sports News oftentimes, if it's a big story, say, well, Gonzalo Higuain's already finished, but as far as the transfer, but if there's a transfer deadline day and they need to go to somebody in Italy to get some expert opinion, they'll go to one of the Sky Italia correspondents. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens there. It'll be a good one to check out. So next up in news is that Sports Illustrated, their paid streaming platform, which is called SITV, which they have some interviews, some exclusive content there that's available on a subscription basis. They've acquired a deal with Liverpool FC to go ahead and provide full match replays of Liverpool games. So this would be Liverpool in the Premier League, Liverpool in Champions League, Liverpool in any competition, essentially. What they would provide is opportunity to catch a full replay of that game, I believe the day after the match has ended. It's a deal that's actually, I believe, let me pull this up here.
So it's no longer on NESN then?
I don't think so. Yeah, NESN, right. So it sounds like it's more like almost like the Liverpool TV coverage, where you have access to the Liverpool TV platform, and SITV has that now. It says that... according to Sports Pro, one of the industry publications, they estimate that a deal like this is probably replay rights is what it is to a full season of the matches from a club is estimated to be valued at $1.6 million.
Yeah, this is the first time it goes to like streaming service, because there's been other channels that have had like Arsenal TV, Milan TV, AC Milan TV, you know, Manchester United TV. This is, I think, the first time a streaming service has it.
Yeah, which is big news. I mean, the thing, though, to me is that if I'm a fan of Liverpool FC, I'm watching these games live. And if I'm not watching them live, I'm recording them and then watching them when I get home that evening. So if it's Champions League, I can't wait until the next day. If it's the Premier League, I can't wait until the day after to watch that game.
Yeah, exactly. So whenever that you know, like whenever Arsenal TV or whenever Liverpool TV airs on that respective channel, you might have to wait until Thursday for to see that, or Barcelona right. TV, Real Madrid TV as well, for that matter.
Yeah,
sometimes you have to wait until Wednesday to see the re-air of the match, and that's ridiculous as well now.
Yeah, so $1.6 million, if that is roughly the amount of money that Sports Illustrated spent on this, is, I don't think, a wise investment. Obviously, what they're trying to do is get more people to subscribe to their SITV paid subscription service. I don't think this is the way to do it, but maybe it works. Maybe Liverpool fans say, hey, I'm sure there'll be some additional coverage too from Liverpool, so maybe this is a way for fans to get that. But then again, they can access Liverpool FC TV directly through, I think, the Roku, and I think also through the website. So, yeah, this is a strange one. But anyway, that's the news. Sports Illustrated, SITV.
Yeah, but it's an added incentive to the people who already have that service. So
true.
So I mean, you have to continue giving them. What people or fans also under, I mean, the market understands now is that if you just offer X amount of benefits, mm-hmm. after a while, people are like, okay, that's it.
I want more.
Because of the competition. Yeah, the competition is always evolving. You're like, oh, this is all I get. Am I going to get anything else? And after a while, you pay this for the same thing over and over and over again. You say, well, I want something else for my money. So they have to continue adding on and taking off. And it depends on what the market's asking for.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're asking for this, though. But again, we'll have to wait and see. And then I guess the numbers will speak for themselves in the future.
Of course.
Yeah. Next up in the news is an interesting news item. This is that CONCACAF has signed a multi-year partnership deal with Flow Sports, which is a streaming service. They've got a soccer streaming service called Flow FC. You may remember that Flow Sports was in the news recently for acquiring the local broadcast rights to DC United in the DC area.
Yeah.
So this deal between CONCACAF and Flow Sports grants the streaming service the exclusive English language U.S. broadcast rights to the CONCACAF Champions League, except for the games involving the U.S. men's national team in the group stage, which will be on either ESPN and or Fox. This deal runs through 2022. Flow Sports says that more than 200 games of this competition will be broadcast live on Flow FC over the course of the deal. And the co-founder of Flow Sports, Mark Floriani, says that the company is investing well into eight figures into the partnership, declining to further comment on financial details of the deal. Juan, what's your take on this one?
I'm glad because I do a lot of those commentaries. So,
yeah.
For me, I mean, we have to see also Mexico. Mexico's not going to, U.S. is not going to get, so much of a better deal as far as having their games on ESPN and Fox, and Mexico's not. So, most likely we'll see Mexico's games will be on Telemundo and or Univision. So, that's going to also be a factor, and we'll see how that goes as well. Who knows? That's interesting though. But I mean, for personal reasons, I had heard already that for the past couple of months there were dealings in the works as far as a distributor, and that helps out because one of the things when the Nations League began, hey, where can we watch these matches? Where can we see our country? Be it Honduras, El Salvador. Honduras wasn't it, but El Salvador, Jamaica. Other countries that I'm slipping off the top of my head. I'm trying to even Cuba, even the smaller teams.
Haiti.
We did the production company that's been in charge of it, especially with Guyana matches. They've really done a good job there because they've had a two-man booth. They've had a commentator and then they've had an analyst. And in most of the cases have been Chris Nurse on the call, who to me is going to be tremendous in the booth, and I think that he has a very promising future in this business as well. But they've given that audience in particular a great view or a great vantage point about the national team as well. He's taught us a great deal about the Guyana national team as well. So that
right.
Overall, you're going to be able to get a feel for that in English, hopefully in Spanish as well eventually. There's a lot of matches that are being commentated in CONCACAF Nations League in Spanish as well.
In theory, I like this deal in that, mm-hmm. you can now have access to the games, from any of the teams competing in this CONCACAF Nations League competition, which there are many countries involved in this. So in practice, though, in business reality, I don't see this working just because, so if it's the Turks and Caicos playing a Guyana or something like that, which might be of an interest to people from those countries, I don't see that. There's going to be some games that will get some large interest and large viewing numbers. But overall, if Flow Sports, if the co-founder is saying that he spent over $10 million in this partnership to acquire these rights, and all of the U.S. men's national team group stage games are not included in this deal, the later rounds are, which is good news. But I just don't see the math working here. This is definitely a huge investment from their point of view, and I'm sure they're thinking about the long term. I'm sure they're probably trying to think like SITV is too, where they're thinking, okay, what other rights can we acquire to strengthen Flow FC as a streaming platform? And this is probably one of the few that's out there that's available to them. And I don't know, I just don't see the math in this one. Also, the CONCACAF Nations League, the tournament itself, is a brand new tournament. Even with the UEFA Nations League, yes, there's interest in the CONCACAF Nations League, but it's an unproven vehicle yet. We don't know if this is going to be of interest to the fans, to the viewers.
Yeah, and you have also teams that are more marketable in the UEFA Nations League compared to CONCACAF. And just be honest.
Yeah, for sure.
As far as now, when you start bringing in the teams like the six teams that weren't in the tournament, the six teams that were part of the hexagonal in the last World Cup round, we'll see if there's a little bit added interest into it. But and we're also going to see how much emphasis are put in the different leagues, how much emphasis is going to be put in League A compared to League C, how much emphasis is going to be in League B, how much of that emphasis is going to be placed on. Are there going to be additional things added to this package? It'll be interesting to see because of how this can turn up, and also how much of an emphasis CONCACAF itself is putting on this tournament, and what they're looking to do in the long term, which is in speaking to people within CONCACAF, is looking to try and make the weak links stronger in order to make CONCACAF more competitive from top to bottom.
Yeah, this is a tournament, Juan, that even if Flow FC or Flow Sports went ahead and offered this for free and said, okay, we're going to open this up and for the first 12 months we're going to have this available for free to everyone, I don't think there's that much interest even at that level. Now when you're asking people to actually pay for it and to try to figure out, okay, what is Flow Sports? What is Flow FC? How does this work? Where is it available? Is it on streaming device? Is it on my tablet, my phone, my Roku? Nobody knows about this company really for the most part if you're a soccer fan until very, very recently, until the last week. And then asking them to pay however many dollars it's going to be, that's a huge obstacle to overcome. And
it can be something innovative or it could end up being like what we've seen in England with 11. It can go either way, but if they don't put out their product, if they don't put out a product, then that's where they're behind the eight ball. So we have to see how it turns out.
Yeah, speaking of 11 Sports too, just a note to add this to the listeners is so that 11 Sports is a streaming service and a TV service also in some countries, but a streaming service in the UK, and they've lost the rights to Serie A, and also they have the rights to La Liga until the end of the season. But the rights for Serie A in the UK have gone to Premium Sports. They've been taken over from 11 Sports. So a lot of turmoil and changes there. Moving on, the next news item is that Telemundo has released some more details about their Copa America coverage for the 2019 tournament. It's coming up this summer from June 14th to July 7th. They will broadcast all 26 matches live in Spanish on Telemundo, Universo, and Telemundo Deportes' app and digital platforms. In terms of some of the talent that's going to be working on this, it'll be everyone from Miguel Gerwitz to Andres Cantor, Viviana Villa, and Manuel Sol, Copan Alvarez, Erasmo Provenza, and Sami Sadovnik. So, so definitely for those people who watched the World Cup, it's going to be a very familiar cast of characters in terms of the coverage, and that will kick off this summer. The big question is the English language rights, and no one as of yet has acquired the rights to this competition in English language. And as somebody who's been talking within the industry, I would look to either DAZN or ESPN Plus as a possible destination for that, but it's still too early to tell.
Yeah, that would probably end up being, you know, that's all going to be world feed at that point if it's one of those. So I'm just telling you, because right now no one knows who's going to be producing that event as of yet. There really hasn't been a decision as to which company is going to be able to, you know, produce everything from site. There's been rumors that Global might take it over. There's HBS for sure. I've already spoken to HBS. They are not doing it because they are doing Gold Cup, which is going on pretty much simultaneously as Copa America. So no one has really stepped up as far as, you know, the company that's going to be producing the world feed for it as of yet. That's going to be interesting, because the time's really, really running out, nobody said, oh, it's going to happen or it's not going to happen. But all signs right now point that most likely Global will take that over, because Global is just a huge monster of a company with so many interests within football inside of Brazil that it's just mind boggling. But it looks like it. But there could be changes as far as that's concerned, as far as the Copa America coverage and the eventual world feeds that would be sent, you know, throughout.
Yeah, definitely. In addition to the Gold Cup, too, there's the Women's World Cup at the same exact time. It's going to be a busy month of soccer.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, not just for viewers, but for the production people out there and just commentators.
Work, sure.
Yeah, it'll be a good summer. All right, let's move on to TV.
Now,
go ahead.
Interesting that you say that, because ESPN, I don't think MLS is stopped. MLS is only stopping for the first 2 weeks of Copa America. So it'll be interesting to see, especially when you have all the friendlies going on. It's interesting to see if ICC is going on at the same time as the first stages of Copa America and Gold Cup, which has already happened in 2017. And, you know, it'll be interesting, because that ends up leaving a lot of people wondering, you know, what to watch and when to watch it. And some things will be on simultaneously.
True. Yeah, it's going to be a crazy summer for sure. You're absolutely right there, Juan. Mm-hmm. So TV ratings wise, not a lot to report from this past week. I mean, most of the games were on ESPN Plus in terms of the FA Cup, so we don't have access to those numbers. Two games that did come out in terms of something of worth mentioning was the USA against Panama game, which we didn't even mention, on ESPN 2 on Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. 545,000 viewers. Which it's prime time on a Sunday, but to me that's actually a good number. I was actually surprised that that many people tuned in. Obviously, a lot of people wanting to see how Greg Berhalter did in his first game. It's a U.S. squad that was essentially a C squad, a C team against Panama, and I think I watched the first
and a D Panama side.
Exactly, I watched the first 10 minutes of this game. The cavernous stadium with so few fans in it, the acoustics were horrible. And it was interesting. I full credit to the cameraman that worked this game, because they kept the angles so tight. There weren't a lot of shots of, hardly any shots of kind of wide expansive shots of the stadium or many crowd shots. It was all kind of very tight on the game itself. So you didn't see, I mean, the acres and acres of empty seats. But after about 10 minutes, I kind of just really lost interest in this game. Didn't really have an interest to watching the rest of it. How about you, Juan?
I didn't watch it. But the few things or the few highlights that I did see, the camera work that I saw from the highlights at ESPN. But I also thought about it, cavernous being, you know, the ticket prices that they had put for these types of games and future games, for that matter, as far as the U.S. national team is concerned. That's a bit preoccupying as well for fans. Mm-hmm. Now I'm gonna defer to you on this one. is it me or does ESPN get better ratings overall compared to Fox?
For sure.
Because the way I see it, I see a much more balanced coverage. I see a much more not unbiased. I guess that's the wrong word to use, but more informative or willing to inform type of broadcast compared to a more nationalistic, more USA rah-rah-rah type of thing that you see at Fox.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've seen that. We've talked about that a little bit on previous episodes, where just taking even just MLS games as an example on a Sunday night, and you've got a mid-afternoon Sunday game on ESPN for whatever MLS team it is. It's a big game. Mm-hmm. And at night, prime time, you've got on FS1, you've got a big MLS game featuring big MLS teams. And you would think that the numbers would be pretty similar. I mean, the number of viewers that have access to ESPN2 versus FS1 are pretty similar. They're very close. So you think that the actually viewing numbers would be very similar. There's a distinct difference. I mean, roughly anywhere from 100 to 200,000 less viewers watching games on FS1 than on ESPN or ESPN2. So yeah, absolutely. So whether that is a comfort level where people are more likely to tune into ESPN2, or whether that is the actual coverage itself, where ESPN sometimes can be a little bit more critical or a little bit more realistic, where with Fox they can be a little bit more cheerleady or just kind of a little bit more fake at times, or whatever it may be, whether it's Alexi Lalas or you. There's so many different variables, but consistently, especially the last 12 months, for MLS broadcasts at least, there's been a big difference. And I'm sure if we went back and looked at the U.S. men's national team numbers too, we would see a similar trend too, where the games on ESPN2 or ESPN on average get a lot more viewers than those same games or those same type of games on FS1. One more point.
It was just an observation that I saw. I didn't have any numbers to back me, but you usually do.
Yeah, definitely. It's something I'm sure the people at Fox are scratching their heads why it's that happening that way, and probably MLS too.
Well, one of the reasons why is that they were very adamant about making the game more American.
True.
You know, they were adamant, and people that have worked with that production, with their World Cup production and other productions, they've been adamant about their commentators being more American, first and foremost. And I can tell you that from what I've heard from people as far as the feedback that they've received. Oh, well, you know, remember that we're in America and we have to do this and we have to do that. And, you know, this is not England and this is not this place and this is not the other. And we don't do certain things. And they want you to not use certain things that you would, you know. So as a commentator, you have to end up adapting a little bit more to what they're looking for instead of what you think is necessary for the fans to understand the game a little bit better.
Yeah, and John Champion, the hiring of John Champion for the ESPN as the lead commentator for the MLS broadcast flies in the face of that, because it is very much ESPN's more of, say, a cosmopolitan, lots of different ethnicities, totally. People different from around the world, whether it's South America or Europe or North America, totally. Versus Fox, that's very U.S.-centric. One more TV rating, and that's this is a really good number. This is Borussia Dortmund against Hannover on FS1 for the Bundesliga on Saturday from 9:30 to 11:30, 136,000 viewers. And I say that's a good number because it's so rare that we get numbers over 100,000 for the Bundesliga on English language channels. And this is now 2 weeks in a row where this has happened. 2 weeks ago or last week it was Bayern Munich. This week. Borussia Dortmund, so that's good numbers for Fox.
Now let me ask you why. I mean, why is that? I mean, I've asked that question before, and I ask you because I've never really been able to get a concrete answer as far as that's concerned. Because if there's a league that has done everything and then some to promote themselves in the best manner possible, it's been the Bundesliga. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, they have very good commentators, you know, such as, you know, you start looking at guys like Derek Gray, Kevin Hatchard, Dan O'Hagan, and guys that I've not only heard, but I've also worked with. And they're tremendous commentators.
Yeah, I can tell you why. And that's the thing, though. The Bundesliga does even like stats packs where they provide the commentators with some great... I mean, the Bundesliga does everything right. The one thing that they do wrong, which is the main reason why the numbers aren't as big as they could be, is it clashes directly with the Premier League. Every time that the Bundesliga puts a game on, the schedule is set in stone, and it clashes exactly with the Premier League. So this past Saturday, with the Borussia Dortmund game getting some higher ratings there for the Bundesliga, that clashes with the FA Cup. And on a normal Saturday morning, whether it's the 9:30 kickoff or the 12:30 kickoff, etc., it clashes exactly with the Premier League. And most of the listeners who are, or most of the viewers who are English language fans of soccer, when they're making a decision on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning to choose, they'll look at La Liga, they'll look at Serie A, they'll look at the Bundesliga. But there, a lot of them are invested in the Premier League. They're invested because they've been fans for maybe a decade, or maybe a couple of decades, or maybe 4 or 5 years, and they're invested in that team, in the storylines. And for Fox and the Bundesliga, this is really more of a Bundesliga problem, for the Bundesliga to go ahead and actually make any changes or make some leaps, or it requires so much. It requires actually changing the schedule. And the Bundesliga, and you know, the German soccer fans are very, very, they're not going to change. Even the Monday broadcasts of the games, there have been protests about Monday games of the Bundesliga. And that's the Bundesliga more. Trying to change things, trying to make themselves more appealing to a global audience for a Monday game. That's a good opportunity for television.
Same thing with La Liga. I mean, there was a protest on Monday as well in La Liga about Monday night games. And La Liga's actually bent over so much. I mean, they go to the other extreme.
Oh, yeah.
That they've bent over so much that they've compromised their fans. I mean, there was a couple of years back, I think there was a Copa del Rey match that began at midnight time.
Yep.
And you're like, a midweek, I'm talking about. It's like, no. You know, or you have a 10:30, 11 o'clock kickoff midweek, and you're like, you're killing the audience, especially if they're kids. You know, so I don't know.
Yeah, but in some ways, though, too, you can look at La Liga and say, actually, it's worked globally from a television perspective. They've become more relevant, they've become more popular. I mean, the U.S. has challenges because of distribution with beIN Sports, but for the most part, La Liga is more prominent now. And it's hot on the tails of the Premier League. But the fans are the ones that actually have been on the receiving end of, I mean, being very difficult in terms of, you mean, kickoff times, or, you mean, changing, you mean, it's so random with the La Liga. But let's move on to a listener mailbag. First up is Jason Ryder. He says, I have a question for the podcast. Now we are going through the fourth round and the fifth round draw. What are your impressions of the FA Cup so far this year? I am loving it myself. Arsenal, Everton, Liverpool and Spurs are all out. And we got another lucky draw with Man United playing Chelsea, opening up even more. I think at this point we could see a final between Man City and the United-Chelsea winner. But it's looking good that we will see two smaller clubs making it to the semi-finals. And of course, you never know if the matchup I just mentioned gets drawn in the sixth round or semi-finals. I love that these cup tournaments has no seeding. Newport County is treated equally as Man United. And Jason, yeah, I completely agree. This year, more than any other, it seems that more and more Premier League teams get knocked out, partly because they're being picked to play each other in the draws. So, I mean, two teams come up against each other, one goes out. Also, there has been some great upsets too. Of course, Wimbledon beating West Ham and Millwall beating Everton, and so on and so forth. But this season, I mean, ESPN Plus is extremely lucky, but to me, this has been one of the best FA Cups in a few years. And
it's at least gained a great deal of interest.
For sure.
Or more interest. And you haven't heard that, oh, you know, the FA Cup is dying, you know, that whole narrative going on. This year, you've actually seen, in essence, and I hate to use the cliche, the magic of the FA Cup as far as a resurrection, if you will, of the tournament, which really never needed resurrection. It was always there to begin with.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree 100% there. JP says, interesting discussion last week on the reader comment on La Liga TV. If the leagues are already producing their own content for worldwide distribution, Kartik mentions the Premier League too, and the future of distribution appears to be streaming. How far away are we from the various leagues bypassing traditional networks and selling the matches, studio shows as a standalone app that can be viewed online or streamed to TV via the Roku, Fire, etc.? Sure, the risk would fall on them in regards to how many will subscribe to make it profitable. Currently, they receive millions / billions as part of three-year contracts for the networks to assume the risk of profitability. But I wonder if it will come to a point when they believe they can go in the standalone route will be more lucrative in terms of subscriber fees and any advertising they can sell around the matches / shows. That in itself right there, Juan, is a topic for another podcast. We can do a whole show on that one.
But in essence, he's right. I mean, it's not only just La Liga. Well, I mean, La Liga not only are doing La Liga TV, they've already hired their own commentators, and they're affiliating with certain production companies, in this case, Media Pro, to be able to do their productions. So you might have the Premier League their own production, but La Liga and even Brazil has Global that they affiliate themselves with. Spain now with Media Pro, because they hired a group of commentators for La Liga matches, not only just La Liga but also second division as well. And if you even want to go to a more regional type of tournament, Copa Libertadores just also hired Media Pro as well to be able to do their productions out of Buenos Aires. So whatever you've been seeing the past few days out of BN, everything is being produced from Buenos Aires and being sent worldwide, both in English, Spanish, and Portuguese.
And that's the thing about La Liga, is they're definitely trailblazers in terms of technology. If in the near future La Liga said, you know what, we just want to do a direct-to-consumer deal. We want to go ahead and bypass, say, the beIN Sports of the world, which is essentially a middleman. But La Liga says, okay, we're going to basically have our La Liga TV and our La Liga games available directly to consumers to subscribe through Roku, Fire, you know, all the streaming devices and smartphones, etc. They could do it. The challenge is in terms of how much revenue can they generate versus going through, say, a beIN Sports and all the other TV broadcasters. And at some point in time, that equation becomes, we can actually make more money going direct to the consumer. But it relies on the consumer to be the type of person that says, you know, I'm willing to subscribe to La Liga TV to have access to all the games. I see it happening more on that kind of level rather than on a club-by-club basis level. Club-by-club, it's even more riskier in terms of, you mean, there's a lot to streaming,
there's a lot of conflicts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, big time.
A ton of conflicts there. You know.
But also in terms of technology, too. I mean, being able to actually be at a level where you can ensure, and we've seen with big companies such as Bleacher Report, Turner Sports, or Fox, issues with streaming. You really have to know the technology in order to make it work.
Yeah, and I mean, again, how much overhead is, you know, for lack of a better term, how much overhead is going to have to be invested upon in order to make this happen? And that's where you see places like Media Pro, as well as on the other end, places like DAZN as well. You know, it's not just tooting their horn. It's just the reality of where the industry is heading and how it will benefit and how it will affect on both ends, and seeing how you can find a happy medium between the two.
Absolutely. Next up is Monty. He says, I have also enjoyed the La Liga TV on Sling World Sports. My only issue is the TV guide in Sling TV does not tell us what is on. I did not even know about the Viva La Liga show. So after listening to the podcast, I went back and watched the show, and I thought it was really good. Monty, the same thing happened with me with Fubo TV too, where if you go into the programming guides, it's sometimes hard to find La Liga TV. What I do oftentimes is either go into the search section and just type in La Liga TV, and it comes up. It's easier to find it that way sometimes. Or I'll just go through the beIN Sports Connect channels and just go from channel to channel to channel until I find La Liga TV. And at that point, then, you mean, I just leave it on for an hour or two and watch it. But as we said in last week's podcast, highly recommended if you're a fan of La Liga. It's just fantastic television and coverage that they do there. Soccer Thoughts says, hey guys, so I have Comcast and I noticed that FS2 was recently added to my package. Do you know how many more subscribers the network has? I usually use Fox Sports Go app, so I was surprised when a Bundesliga game on FS2 was available to watch. And FS2, so in certain markets nationwide with Comcast, they've been adding FS2. So in markets, I think in the Northeast and in the Northwest, where before you didn't have access to FS2, if you check, you probably now have that. We've had FS2 down here in South Florida, at least where I live, for quite some time through Comcast. In terms of the other question, how many more subscribers? As far as I know, there hasn't been much of an increase. And I think FS2 was about 50 million subscribers. So far less than, say, FS1 or ESPN2, but still small potatoes, roughly, when in terms of the big sports networks. Chris Whittingham says, can they show the whole Sky Sports news on NBC Gold? I'd be glued the whole day if that was offered. I also think offering Sky Sports Premier League a channel I absolutely loved in the UK would be an amazing offering to NBC Sports Gold.
That's a good question. I mean, that sounds interesting. And by the way, I actually, now leading to this, it helps me answer a question that I was asked before, because I was asked at one point, hey, you know, you talk about a lot about commentators and this and the other. And so which young American commentators would you be recommending? Ladies and gentlemen, that young man right there, Chris Whittingham. To me, he's going to be one of the bright, he's one of the bright young and upcoming commentators as far as football is concerned. I don't say it to kiss his ass. I say it because, to be honest with you, he's very good at what he does. And as far as young ones up and coming, he's pretty much at the top of my list.
Yeah, and Chris definitely is a scholar of the game in terms of reading the game and always trying to improve his craft. And in answer to Chris's question, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if NBC Sports Gold says, you know what, we're going to add Sky Sports News to it on a daily basis, just to add to the value of that streaming service. The big question is in terms of how many people tune in today for the Sky Sports News transfer deadline day, what those viewing numbers are, which will give an indication to NBC whether or not it's worth adding Sky Sports News to NBC Sports Gold. So we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Now, will people subscribe just for that? I mean, it would be great, ideal for them, but
I think some people would subscribe purely just for the Sky Sports News and forget the Premier League. They say, okay, I'm subscribing because of Sky Sports News. As someone who's watched Sky Sports News for years, it gets old after a while, because I'm not a big fan of Sky Sports News myself, for many, many different reasons. But for a transfer deadline day, it's great, but it can get old pretty fast.
Just for the basics alone, from what, you know, I mean, I've also seen it quite a bit in the past few years. After, you know, it's just the same news cycle going over and over again. Yeah. So after a while, it gets repetitive. You don't get any news stories until you have to wait maybe an entire news cycle or two to be able to get something like that. Of course, there's other reasons why, but first and foremost, just to start that, you know, I could only be able to watch it maybe 1 hour a day, if that.
Yeah, same here too. Same here. You know, I'm the same way too. Just because it then becomes very repetitive. It's the same news stories being repeated every hour, and it's like, okay, there's nothing going on, and it just feels that they're just, you know, trying to make it exciting. And it's good background channel to have on if you're you know, working and you have it on in the background. If something does happen, then you'll see the breaking news thing. But for the most part, it's unnecessary, I think, for the most part. Last but not least, Robert Hay says, so do you think everyone is underestimating Flow Sports as a player in the US soccer streaming market? My answer to that one, Robert, and to listeners, would be that I think everyone's overestimating Flow Sports. What we don't know is in terms of what their long-term vision is. So yes, they've acquired local rights to DC United, and now they have the CONCACAF Nations League. Maybe they have bigger goals. But at the end of the day, I think what it is that Flow Sports has money. So they have investment, and money talks. So if you're willing to put down $10 million plus on the CONCACAF Nations League, and they think that's a viable product to acquire to be able to generate enough income to make that profitable, more power to them. But I think in some ways we're overestimating Flow Sports in that there's no track records. They have not done any soccer coverage before. So I think it's, to me at least, I'm seeing it as we're kind of overestimating their ability. But I guess we'll have to wait and see how they do.
as of right now, I don't think anyone's underestimating or overestimating. I mean, it's difficult to really get a gauge on a virtually unknown commodity. You can't really get a grasp on it. I mean, if you know, so far, the intentions are good. But if it's solely based on two things, then people are overestimating. If it's based on what they can do, then maybe it can be a player in 2 to 5 years from now. It's something that you have to wait and see. What other, I mean, as far as products are concerned, products attract product, brand attract brand. And if they didn't have anything, then it would be very difficult to kind of get that sales pitch going. Once they have the CONCACAF, the Nations League, once they have DC United, and then they start attracting other things, then we can start really making it a player. But until right now, I mean, it's rather, you know, the jury can still be out until MLS begins, until March begins, because that's really when their products, you know, come to life, when DC United starts playing, also when, you know, Nations League pretty much starts the last round prior to the Gold Cup.
Exactly. Yeah. For me, the name bothers me, though, too. Every time I hear Flow Sports, I think of Flow from Progressive. I mean, that's all I'm thinking of.
I think about Flow in the Caribbean.
Okay.
I think about Flow, you know, because they've become a big player as far as distribution rights in the Caribbean. They've had some troubles as well, but they're the ones that had the Premier League. They're the ones that had some of the bigger properties as far as football rights were concerned. And they became the big competitor alongside Sportsmax as far as that's concerned. And they did what Sportsmax did for the World Cup, which was go digital and go as far as mobile phones. That's where they started going and really started gaining some traction as well. So could it be that? Could it be 11? That's still to be seen.
Yeah. And that's a different flow than this flow for Flow Sports.
Exactly.
But the possibilities are endless, especially when it comes to digital and streaming. And if you have investment, which it sounds like Flow Sports does. So another one that we'll have to wait and see what happens there. So you can always reach us through email at web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as on facebook.com/worldsoccertalk and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. If you have any questions, advice, rants and raves, you agree with us, disagree with us, whatever it may be, as long as it relates to soccer media, we'd love to read that out on air. Plus, of course, you can always post comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Juan, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I've really enjoyed having these discussions and learning some more insights in terms of what you've been working on, but also in terms of some of your expertise in the industry. Where can listeners go ahead and find out more about you and subscribe to any of the services or any of the interviews, et cetera, that you do?
Well, right now, obviously, as I mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast, my podcast over on Beyond the Pitch, which you can go, pretty much at Beyond the Pitch. You can listen to all the interviews that we've had so far. Phil, as well as myself, Roberto Rojas, the gentleman that broke the Miguel Almirón story as far as going to Newcastle, and also a doppelganger for him. He was also doing that podcast as well. And of course, we also have a Spanish version of Beyond the Pitch as well. You can follow me on Twitter at @Juan_Arango. Obviously, you can read all my information, my column and everything over at Diario Sport in Barcelona. I'm going to be switching from football to football this weekend, as I have to do a write-up on the Super Bowl. So that'll be interesting. And also, I do a lot of NBA now for them as well. I also have a Patreon account you can go to. I'll put that up as far as my social media as well, and I'll let you know that to subscribe for articles, translations, interviews that I do, things of that nature that I do within that service as well. And I do stuff for DAZN. I'm actually doing tennis for the University of Miami and the ACC Network. That'll be exciting as well, and a whole lot of things. So.
Yep.
I'm really looking forward to everything that's coming as far as the year's concerned. All good. And of course, there's a lot of things that people are fearful about, but then there's also things that people need to be looking forward to as well.
And DAZN, of course, has the Asian Cup final on Friday, Qatar against Japan there, I think at 9 o'clock in the morning for the final. So if anyone's interested in watching that one, it is available through DAZN. And they have a 30-day free trial, so that always helps. All right, everyone. Well, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. And looking ahead to another, what we hope it'll be another great week of football from around the world. Enjoy your football.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.